Hey everyone, I'm Kari.
Hello everyone, I am Bree.
And this is CSI Talk. Welcome back, everyone, another week, another episode of Since I Talk. Thank you for joining us today. Or have a safe place here, okay? You're safe here. And we love you. CSI Vegas Season 3 is coming back on February 18th. All I care is that we're getting more CSI.
Yes, and I found out what show is taking the formal place of CSI. It's a show called Elsbeth, which is so... It's Paul Universe. That was The Good Wife, that was on CBS. The Good Fight, that was on Paramount Plus for the States. And now, it's Elsbeth, which will be Thursday night at 10 p.m., which was CSI.
Well, the cast just got back to set, literally this past week. The cast is back, and Catherine Willows is going to be on Season 3, everyone.
That's something we weren't sure about.
We weren't sure if Catherine was returning. But March, she posted like a story of her, but you can actually listen to her.
It's her voice.
It's her voice. It was on her Instagram. You can see it on my page on Twitter.
At Cap Marvel Title.
Yeah, if you follow me on Twitter, at Cap Marvel Title, Cap is his word, Captain Marvel, because I absolutely love those movies and Title, because I love their title. Catherine's back, and it was a story and March posted on her Instagram, and of Paula, Mindy, and Sarah Gilman, on set of CSI. Also,
no, it was on set. It was the hotel. So in shows, when people are shooting certain episodes, especially if not near where they live, they get to stay in hotels.
Yeah, it could be, or it could be the scene. That, I don't know what they were doing, but they were together. And also, Matt Lawyer is back. It's on everyone's Instagram at this point. I haven't seen Minty posting the picture though, but I mean, she probably will. Matt Lawyer is back. And Josh, I don't know if he's part of that scene, but Josh was not wearing his CSI vest. But he was definitely not in jail. So here's my theory. I'm thinking that Catherine posted bail because they didn't have sufficient evidence to prove that he was guilty. Or maybe that he was also not guilty. Anyway, something's gonna happen. My boy's not gonna be in jail for long because Catherine's gonna post his bail. And then they're gonna work their way to exonerate him, kind of like what was happening during season one and also season two. You're going to work like on this main case of Josh Folsom, but also on the other cases of the week. I mean,
two seasons of Josh Folsom being the case.
And actually, they have been setting up this whole Josh Folsom arc since season one.
Yeah.
Because on season one, on the very first episode, he tells something along the lines that Max gave him a chance when nobody else did. I'm guessing that Max is going to give him another chance. And they're going to work to exonerate him because at that point in time when Folsom really needed, Max was there for him. And now the whole team is going to work with him, but I didn't see any pictures of Serena. I'm going to post like a thread on Twitter of every day of the behind the scenes of CSI Vegas season 3, but I haven't seen anything of Serena. But I don't know, maybe she came back to Miami. Maybe she couldn't take it being with Josh, because it's obvious that Josh always had a thing for Allie, and Allie had a thing for him, but they were never together. Or maybe they were at some point and we just don't know. Maybe it's the same thing that happened with Grissom and Sarah. But I'm thinking that maybe they're gonna ask Josh, the team is gonna ask Josh to specifically use his skills to help them solve some cases, because he can reconstruct crime scene, right? But technically they're breaking the law, because he would probably be accused of a crime. He wouldn't be able to work with them. But either way, he's going to work with them because we all know CSIs. We know, like, we've seen it. We've been there. Okay. I think he's going to reconstruct some crime scenes for them and work with them. And also, who was Penny engaged to? I want to know, but I think that she's engaged to Chris. I mean,
And how long has that been, my theory?
Yeah. Bree had this theory for a very long time. I don't know. I'm going to wait for the confirmation. Okay. Because all we know for sure is that Bo knows him, but Bo knows everyone in the lab, so who is it? We don't know. And they have to be the same level, right? They can't be advisor or subordinate, right? Following this lead, before we get into today's episode, because we're going to talk about another episode from the DB era, I posted that video, that story, Mark, Paula, and Mandeep and Sarah, and it was like, Catherine Willows is coming back. I mean, we're not sure that she was coming back. And then, okay, guys, look, Sarah Saito is my favorite character in the, or one of my favorite characters in the whole CSI franchise, okay? I absolutely love her. I love her to death. Okay,
so it's the first fiction account, you know, minus Hermione Granger, because I grew, when I was kids, I grew up with that franchise, literally age 5, the first movie came out. Can't believe it's been 21 years. That was one character that I felt that I really loved.
Yeah, I know most of us, especially women, really a lot to Sarah, because we see ourselves in her and how crimes involving women and kids and all that, like how she was affected by it and all that. And we absolutely loved her relationship with Grissom, but Georgia Fox made the decision to leave the show in the end of season 1 because she didn't want it to separate Grissom and Sarah. We know damn well how painful it was for all of us who shipped GSR, how horrible it was to watch Forget-Me-Not and to come to the realization that Grissom and Sarah were not together anymore. She doesn't want to separate Grissom and Sarah, and then we all want Sarah to come back. She's not coming back. She's not coming back. And honestly, I'm trying to be as nice as I can about this, but it's actually really annoying and it's probably super hurtful to see
everybody. Yes.
Yeah, to see people like keep commenting and keep telling CES and all that that we want Sarah back, and or we want Grissom back, or we want Nick back. At the end of the day, even though we love this character, this is not our decision to make. The decision, like, it's a lot of other people. Like, a lot goes into the process of writing a TV show. I think a great example of how to see it, even a part of it, is like the making of shows that Marvel always puts out after they air a show. Most recently, they did that with Loki season 2. And the writers of the show, they come out and they say like how they should have to instruct like this whole storytelling from the beginning. And it's not just calling up an actor and be like, oh, can you be here in 20? It takes months of planning to do this. It took years of planning to bring CSI back. And then it took months to even like bring the, you know what I mean? You know, to select the actors and, you know, be like, oh, let's bring Grissom and Sarah back, and suddenly Hodges is in the mix. And then on season 2, we have Catherine and Greg. And on season 3, we're still going to have Catherine.
And we don't know for a fact if anybody's coming back.
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure Georgia Fox Miller Peters is not coming back.
The doors are still open for old characters to come back. They could be good or they could be bad. I mean, it would be really freaking good if they brought back a villain. They're good. They're good again with a miniature killer. But like, bring my girl
back. I
go
Squeagle.
Or bring Squeagle.
Because Squeagle's not cool.
Maybe he can do like his golden bird street again. I mean, I don't know. Or maybe the CSIs have to go and talk to Natalie Davis. That'd be great. I mean, for me, because I don't love what Natalie Davis did to Sarah, but
Natalie Davis was brilliant.
But it was brilliant, like, how the whole season 7 thing was built. And then, like, on season 3, what is going to happen? We're going to see the whole Josh Folsom story arc developing. And they set up this huge drug lord that they're going to have to take down on season 3. What is going to happen now? Right. And also, I have to say, make Penny and Bo series regular.
I thought Bo and Russ.
Yeah, I thought so too, but he's not. Make Penny and Bo series regular, okay? Because, I mean, they're the comedic duo, and again, it would be so funny if they had this funny case, and they were the lead investigators. And
they make Grissom-level puns.
Oh, absolutely. I think they were absolutely
I
good.
Like Grissom-level puns.
I know you do, especially Bo would make it. I think Bo would definitely do a Grissom pun.
Well, Grissom puns are dumb jokes. And Bo with the dad.
God, it would be really fun if one day Bo comes to the lab with his daughters because, like, my wife has to work and they have to come to work and there's nobody to look after my daughters. I have to come with them. And then Catherine comes in with her granddaughter as well.
Well, I don't think Lindsay's gonna let Catherine walk.
Yeah, okay, don't ruin my headcanon. And then Catherine comes in with Hannah and now, like, And then they put like those three girls inside Max's office or like the break room. And then Max just shows up and be like, since when are we running a CSI kid school?
No,
like,
since when are we licensed to be in daycare?
Since when this lab turned into a daycare? What are we covering today? We're covering a DBR episode. It's called Frame by Frame, episode 5 from season 14. The fan is in this episode as well, and I absolutely love it. And I've been dying to cover a DB episode, and I'm not going to die to cover that episode that shall not be named.
Well, we'll be covering it.
Okay, shut up.
That's what I say, because season comes back on the 18th.
I can't believe that we're going to cover this on the almost on the eve of CSI Vegas coming back. And we're going to cover this Broken Heart episode. Do you guys see what I have to deal with here? We're going to cover the most horrible episode for Dear Star Fans.
The most heartbreaking episode on Valentine's Day, which is the Day of Love.
And Alston, 4 days later, CSI Vegas comes back. And then, like, if you tag our Instagram page, it's going to be full of those cheesy Valentine's Day cards that we always post.
And then at nighttime, you'll be... New episode, Forget Me Not.
Forget Me Not, everyone. Do y'all remember this episode? We all hate it. Now that we all hate it, okay. I actually cannot say one good thing about this episode. Jackhead looked really good. That's the one good thing I'm gonna say. She looked stunning with that red jacket. That's the one thing I'm gonna say. Okay, so the official synopsis of Frame by Frame is the team gets a second crack at a reclusive millionaire who may have gotten away with murder 14 years earlier when a new dead body is found in his home. We have Jane Doe. She's dead on the home of a wealthy movie buff. I didn't even know that there are wealthy movie buffs, but I very much like to become one day because that'd be great. His name is Jack Whiten. I'm not even sure how to pronounce his name, but...
Winston.
Anyway. Okay, so Jane Doe was a victim of blunt force trauma to the back of the head. So, Big Dave, he was OD 2 hours prior to the CSI's arriving. So, okay, it's a fresh scene. We have wine bottles and drugs paraphernalia near the body. So, it means that the killer wanted the police and the CSI to believe that the victim got high and drunk. Her body is laying next to a 3D model of a never-built Premier Casino. Apparently, there was because Vegas is never, there's never enough casinos in Vegas, right? Greg is a walking mafia casino Las Vegas historian, and he tells Dave that before that casino was built, Jack, he was the prime suspect in the murder of a young woman. So it's literally the same thing that is happening. 14 years prior, the same thing happened, and the CSIs were the case for Sarah and Catherine. Jack, he told them that he woke up from a nap in his screening room and then he found the victim. He tried to perform CPR but couldn't revive her, so then he called 911. There are no signs of break-ins, okay, so nobody broke in. Sarah's already pissed, okay, because Sarah wanted to pin this guy down for murder 14 years prior. This is season 14. So this happened back in season 1. We just never saw it. We just have to assume this happened in season 1. Right.
Well, between 1 and 2.
Or between 1 and 2, and we just never seen it.
Well, we know Grissom is away.
Or Grissom, you know, went to some cockroach.
Yeah, that's why he's away.
Yeah, he went to some cockroach. Or it could have happened while Warwick was playing supervisor. And
Catherine wasn't in the episode where Catherine played. Where Catherine was in the episode where Warwick played supervisor.
Yeah, okay, so maybe it happened when Grissom went to a second cockroach thing, and then Sarah and Eckley was probably the acting supervisor of night. And Sarah and Catherine got this case and they worked on it, but they couldn't pin the guy. Sarah, she's pulling a white fiber from the carpet in the bedroom. And then we have a flashback. Okay, we have a lot of flashbacks happening. There's a lot of flashbacks happening in this episode. In the flashback, she tells Catherine that the white fiber from the crime scene probably is enough to get a search warrant. But Catherine tells her that Jack actually had a lot of connections. So they wouldn't be able to get a warrant. Sarah was still new at this. I mean, she wasn't new at the job, but she was new to Vegas at this point. During season 1 and season 2, Sarah and Catherine's relationship was not really the best. I mean, the show was made in the early 2000s, so women hated each other for absolutely no reason. Sarah is telling Russell, or DB, that she's filling him in on the case that happened 14 years ago. What happened 14 years ago is that Darcy Blaine, an 18-year-old, she was saw leaving the bar with Jack, but she was never seen again. And Sarah thinks that Darcy was murdered in the room they were standing. But DB tells her that she has to focus on the case that they're working on, not the case that happened 14 years ago. And he is absolutely right. I love DB. You know, DB is probably one of my favorite supervisors. I mean, Max is better, of course. I absolutely love Max. Max is a little boy. She's my mother. I love her. And Sarah is like, oh, if Jack was put away for the first murder, the victim that they have right now would not be dead. Tara, you don't know that. You cannot blame yourself for this. Not me, because we're your character. Okay. Finn. I love Finn. She should have been alive. She should not have been killed. A spoiler alert, you've never seen.
Especially since she died off screen.
Yeah, she died off screen after a gig hopper killer kills her.
Yep.
Actually, DB interrupted him when he was building the crime scene and they found her body and we thought that she would come back, but she didn't. We only heard that she is dead because in immortality, we don't see her. And then, like, we see, like, Finn and Greg, they're trying to recreate the scene. And says that Jack, you know, they think that Jack shared a bottle with the victim. First of all, is he? What is this old man doing with this girl that is barely out of high school? And when Jack tried to actually, you know, go and have sex with her, she tried to leave, but he didn't want her to leave. And then he killed her. There is a broken wine glass on the floor that could confirm their theory. And Greg also finds the piece of cork among the broken pieces, but that piece was intact. The CSIs now think the victim tried to leave the house, but Jack hit her with a lamp. Because remember, COD was a blunt force trauma to the head. So he could have hit her with a wine bottle, with a lamp, or with, I mean, there's so many ways you can hit someone with to cause blunt force trauma. And also they find the blood cast off on a nearby lamp. That could also prove their theory right. So, come with me.
Come with me, and you'll be...
Okay. Okay, so follow me here. You don't have a song for that. I know you don't. Follow me here. Jack was trying to have sex with her. Victim resisted. Tried to leave. He goes after her with something in his hand. Could have been a lamp. Could have been a wine bottle. Hits her head. The impact is so hard that it's enough to open a wound in her head to produce the cast off the DC. But Finn is like, why wouldn't he make the body disappear like he did 14 years ago? So apparently, that it could have... They don't know what happened to the victim of 14 years ago. Because they couldn't pin him down. They don't know if the victim was dead. Because the cold case, actually, they don't know if the victim was dead or if the victim had actually disappeared. Finn is with Sarah. On this case, she thinks that Jack killed the victim 14 years ago and that made her body disappear. I mean, if you watch the show You on Netflix, there's a very disgusting scene to a Cardi B song.
That's Cardi B.
No, it's not a disgusting scene like the one you're thinking. I mean, the scene, they put her song in the background and like Joe is doing something with the body. But anyways, Finn is like, why didn't he make this new body disappear like he did 14 years ago? Finn is onto something here, okay? She's onto something here, even though she agrees with Sarah. They brought Jack in for question, right? Because this is the second body. This is the second case that he's been involved with, you know, the second girl that apparently died in his house. He said that he was upstairs watching a movie in a soundproof screening room, okay? So there was no way that he could hear what was happening outside when the murder took place. And he said that he never saw the victim before. And the blood that they found on his hand is because he tried to revive her. His claims could be proven true, but the CSI still thinks that he did it. Klee, surprisingly, thinks that he is guilty of both murders. They have no body for the first victim, but they think that the first victim is dead.
No body to cry.
Okay, I love that reference. Klee thinks that they are dealing with two murder cases here, and he's like, I'm going to nail you for this murder. Okay, Sarah and Eckley, because Catherine is not working with them anymore. So Catherine is at the FBI, in which a doppelganger of Josh Folsom invited her to join the FBI. Just one question. Why couldn't they never acknowledge the fact
that... They have not yet. Who knows?
time and acknowledge the fact that there was a
doppelganger. He's like 10 times removed.
Like, I really wanted a scene in season 2 of Catherine and Josh just interacting and being like, I feel like I know you. Do I know you? It's just like a gag, but that didn't happen. But when are you going to acknowledge that there was a doppelganger, there is a doppelganger of Josh Holton that is an FBI agent? I'm waiting.
The waiting.
Yeah, we're waiting. Give us a solid reason why there is a doppelganger of Josh Holton.
Could be like just a truly like a doppelganger effect where those people look like each other in the same country.
Since they're building this whole arc of Josh Holton, they should have put like that Josh has a twin brother, but they got separated on birth. They got separated at birth. One became an FBI agent and the other became a CSI. And then like, I don't know, they would probably have to come up with an excuse as to why Catherine didn't remember that his brother brought her into the FBI or something.
Well, they don't know they're related. They're separated at birth.
Okay. But Catherine, like, the writers have to come up with an excuse as to why Catherine didn't realize that.
Let's check
the one. Okay. I've solved your problem of Matt Lawyer playing two characters in the CSI franchise. Okay, now. Twin brothers separated at birth. Okay. So.
To be like a sister-sister situation. Please tell me, you guys know that reference?
Okay. Darren and Eckley, they pull out the case they had. The first victim is called Darcy Blaine and was working on the basis on season 1, okay? So this case, we're theorizing here that this case happened either on the end of season 1 or between season 1 and season 2. And somehow Grissom was not working because he was probably on a cockroach race or something. And Eckley apologizes to Sarah for using his rank because he was the day shift supervisor, right? And he used his race to take away the case from the night shift 14 years ago. Now, if Grissom was there, Eckley would have never pulled that move. Eckley would have never pulled that move on Grissom. And Grissom would have been pissed if Eckley had done that to Catherine, and especially to Sarah. He, in the past, 14 years ago, he actually denied the request to get a warrant for the house because 14 years ago, he denied Catherine and Sarah's request to get a warrant for Jack's house because of how much Jack and his family had done for the city. It's literally the same premises of like in the past, like, oh my god, a person just dropped that and the only person near her is like the mayor, but the mayor could have been guilty because it's such a respectable person, you know, kind of on these lines. And he also told Catherine and Sarah that they were looking for answers in the wrong place. Because Darcy was a drug addict and she was living in a different part of the city, just like Grissom said in the beginning. I think this is the one when Grissom breaks the coffee pot on Eckley's hand, that Eckley already has the answers and he only finds the way through it. So
the reverse scientific method.
Yeah. God, I studied scientific method. God, don't even tell me. So Eckley and Sarah, they are now looking through surveillance pictures of Jack and Darcy, the first victim, when they were leaving the club and going to the parking garage. And the next morning, Darcy's car was actually found abandoned. And they had evidence that it was driven up to Mount Charleston. There was a lot of blood in the trunk that tested positive for cocaine and GHB. GHB is the date rape drug. And Sarah thinks that actually Jack tried to drug and sexually assault Darcy, but he couldn't do it. Something happened and he couldn't do it because Darcy was probably already a drug addict. And Sarah's theory was like, since Darcy was already a drug addict, maybe the amount of drugs that Jack had given her was not enough to knock her down. She fought back, which resulted in Jack killing her. And he dumped the body on Mount Charleston. And while doing that, a copper fiber was left in the trunk. And the fiber is a close match to the one that Sarah got from the bedroom recently. Okay, so the carpet is the same. I mean, dude, you don't change your carpet. It's been 14 years and you're literally accused of murder. Why didn't you change your carpet? Anyways, the new victim is identified as Wayne Oneta, and she is an 18-year-old high school dropout. You see, she was not even barely out of high school. She dropped out of high school. And I don't know how old is he, 40 years old? He was trying to get into her parents.
Well, actually, this time we found out he was never trying to do neither.
Yeah, I know. We'll find out that in the end. But CSI is now thinking that he was 20-something years old and he was trying to get into the hands of an 18-year-old. I mean, her age literally ends with teen.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. So
it is.
She actually had three drug arrests in the past, which matches with Darcy's history. Darcy, the first victim. In the autopsy, my favorite sequences of CSI, Doc Robbins actually is able to pull a chip of glass from Gwen's head wound. But he doesn't think it's something that looks like a wine glass. And wine glass is a lot thicker to preserve the alcohol. And it varies from brand to brand, but it was probably green. And Morgan actually thinks that the glass that Doc Robbins pulled from the wound is from the lamp that they found on the scene. If you watch the episode, there's a lot of lamps in that scene. Why do you have so many lamps, dude? Why don't you just put a light in your ceiling?
And why didn't they have a certain lamp that's from a certain movie, from a certain Christmas movie? Christmas Story. Oh, wait, it's seasonal.
Hodges tells Sarah that the copper fibers from both cases don't match. And Darcy's father, Walters, he comes to the station because he found out that Jack's name was brought into another murder investigation. Sarah is like, I promise you, I'll do whatever I can to bring justice for Darcy. Okay. So maybe this guy had a police killer, or maybe he searched the news. So to do right by his bestie, Greg is like, I'm going to search every single carpet in this damn house to find a match. In the upstairs hallway, he actually finds FB. The second, and another cork, and more cork, and another carpet. So he tells Finn that both materials were used in constructions of preservation rooms. Of course, Greg would know that. Okay, at this point, Greg has written a whole book about Vegas history. The whole team hasn't found a room in the house that had that exact match, but Greg is able to find a break in the baseboard. So he pulls a framed poster from the wall, which has a locked vault. Oh my god, Taylor's vault. No, it's not a Taylor's vault. It's not a Taylor's vault. They hear a woman screaming from the inside. So Greg opens the vault by putting the correct code. And the code that he puts, it's the days that the casino premiere was supposed to happen. Okay. Finn and Greg actually find a woman bound and gagged. And when they take the gag out of her mouth, she says that Jack tried to kill her and her friend Glenn. It's not looking good for Jack. It's not looking good for Jack at this point. Okay, a woman was found dead, and then another woman is found bound and gagged inside his vault. The woman that they find is Emily Bradwell, and she's taken to the hospital. And then she tells DB and Sarah that she and Glenn met Jack at a club. What is happening with this guy at this point, okay? Why are you trying to get into bed with teenagers? You're 40 years old. What is wrong with you? Go search for help. And then they got drunk on champagne. They went back to Jack's house. Jack pushed Emily into the preservation room, tied her up, locked her up. And then she says that she heard Jack attack Gwen. And it's, which is something that DB confirmed with another questions, but in the hallway, DB tells Sarah that he thinks it's actually curious that Emily was able to hear something when she was so far away from the crime scene, right? Because we're talking about a crime scene that has a lot of soundproof material, and so you can visualize in your head, it's like as if Emily was in the second floor on the very left side. And the crime scene was on the first floor on the very right side when the crime took place. DB is like, the mathing. Something's wrong. He tells Sarah that if they're going to pin down Jack for the murder, they need more than Emily's statement, which is absolutely true. They need more than her statement. They need to prove that Jack killed Gwen to prove that they have the right guy. The glass that Doc pulled from Gwen's head, when the second victim, is inconsistent with a lamp. It would match something found on the flashlight. And both Emily and Gwen were actually questioned. Like, there were people breaking the entry and stealing stuff from houses in the assembly area, and they were both questioned about it. And when they combine all those facts, they actually have a theory that those girls actually broke into Dax's house. And Greg is like, oh no, this is wrong because Jack has a very top level security system in his house. How could they have broken in? And this wouldn't explain how Emily was tied up and locked in the vault. They actually now need the murder weapon. Greg says there is one place they haven't searched, which is the vault. So they have to come back and look for it. And they actually find the flashlight and Emily's fingerprints are on it. But it's not looking good for Emily now. So Greg tells Sarah that, but he is told that Emily died in the hospital. Emily died in the hospital 2 hours prior. And not talk to me, my favorite sequence of CSI. Doc Robbins says that COD was actually a paralysis of the respiratory system that was caused by the ingestion of silver. He tells Sarah that her skin is blue because of a reaction called argyria. It happens when silver is absorbed into the bloodstream because as a salt and deposited into the skin. So what happens is that her body absorbs silver and the silver got into her bloodstream as a salt. The salt is the one that, like, you put in the food or stuff like that. And the salt, in turn, was deposited onto her skin. Exposure to the light turned the salt back into elemental silver, which created the blue skin. When her stomach contents are empty, they actually find out that she swallowed a roll of film. Okay, girl, that is not girl dinner. Emily's car is found a block away from Jack's house, and inside, they find a post-it note with Jack's address and his security code, and also the one from the preservation room. Actually, Jack was actually the intended victim all along. Okay, but something happened. So Finn says that Emily's boyfriend texted Gwen at a very inconvenient time, revealing that both of them were sleeping with the same guy. They were both sleeping with the same guy, and they two fought. In the flashback, Gwen is trying to leave, but Emily chased her off, hit her with the flashlight, and she died. You know, that was a blunt force trauma. Like, what a blunt force trauma. Like, that must have been a hell of a flashlight, dude. She went back to the vault to find a roll of film that they were looking for. Like, they were looking for a specific roll of film. And when she heard Jack call 911, she actually improvised. She hit the flashlight. She locked herself in the vault. She swallowed the roll of film and tied herself up. But, like, what's the deal with the roll of film? When Hodges is able to clean up, he and Sarah see a film of Darcy Blaine. Darcy Blaine is the first victim.
And this film is from after Darcy Blaine supposedly died.
Yeah, Greg actually concludes that it was shot in the 2000s in Boulder City. Darcy is actually acting very flirty to the camera, and which contradicts Jack's story of Jack's claim of never having met her before the night they walked to the club. But if the CSIs know that Jack is guilty, then someone else does as well. Because why were these two girls that had nothing to do with Jack in the first place trying to get into his house to get this particular role film? Greg thinks that the person knows about the film because they were the ones that shot it. And since this roll of film was manufactured before 1952, Greg remembers, Greg is Las Vegas historian, and he remembers that it was in preparation for the opening of the premiere. How old is Jack, actually? If this casino was supposed to open in the early 50s.
He was a collector.
Anyways, Jack hired a bunch of photographers to use the vintage camera to shoot the premiere, like to shoot the opening of the premiere on vintage film. If one of them shot a footage of Darcy, this person would know about her his relationship with her. They think this photographer was having a hard time financially, was trying to blackmail Jack. But, like, how are they going to find this person? Hodges says that the pressure plate on the camera and finger scratches on the film is like a fingerprint, okay? It's unique to every film. So they just have to match those patterns to a specific camera, so they will have their cameraman. Hodges is able to track down, and they find out that one of them into a Vegas area, and then they found out that one of those photographers that were there shot the film of Darcy. The camera was all at a pawn shop, to a name to, by a man named Bob Deer. I don't know. He was a cameraman employed by Jack. When they search Robert's apartment, he is also dead. This is literally the third victim that they find connected to this case.
Yep.
When he was dead by a gunshot to the head, and the caliber weapon is a .22, and it's the type of gun that Jack owns. And bank records states that Jack's corporation transferred $750,000 money to Robert and $2,000. Finn is like, okay, so this guy was trying to blackmail money out of Jack. Jack paid him off because he knew about Darcy's murder. But 14 years later, he ran out of money since he knew that just his word against Jack was not going to be possible because of all the connection he put those two girls to work to find the film. This is kind of reminding me of the Zapruder film. Anyways, so he's brought into questioning again. Jack says that Robert used to work for him, but they hadn't seen each other in a long time. So when he is shown the film of Darcy, Jack says that he never seen it before. He actually admits to Brett and Ackley that he met Darcy in the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. So he was addicted to drugs as well. They both loved old films and they would watch some together in his screening rooms. And he said that one night, both of them relapsed. And when he woke up the next morning, he found out that Darcy was dead in his bed, covered in blood. Robert showed up in the house and said that he would get rid of her body in exchange of money. So he shows them a picture of Darcy's body that Robert took while they were cleaning up the scene. And he keeps the picture as a reminder of who he is today. Like, sir, keeping a picture of a supposed dead body in your wallet, it's not good.
He did it to remind him that he fell off and kept him, helped him stay clean.
Yeah, but a picture of a dead body? I mean, he should go to therapy.
Therapy does not always work.
I know. Well, I don't know. Ballistics on the bullet says that killed Robert. It's not a match to Jack's gun. Okay, so he's off the hook again. And Sarah is really pissed because they had everything to nail this guy, but the evidence isn't giving what she wanted. Sarah decides to go through the record of the pawn shop, and she finds out that Robert was in the possession of the film until 1 month ago. He pawned the camera and all of the film, including the one that had the frames of Darcy. And everything was purchased by Jack. That means that Jack was telling the truth. Like, he wasn't lying when he said that he had never seen the films of Darcy before. Because why would Robert try to get a hold of the film if he had proof of the murder the whole time? You know what I mean? And they're like, why would he need more proof that Jack did it? Greg remembers that while he was working as a lab tech, because then when this case first happened 14 years ago, he was a lab tech. He actually just remembered now. Like, he's like, oh, guys, I remember when I was a lab tech. I ran the talk panel.
Okay, do you remember something from 15 years, from over 10 years ago?
Well, you would expect that talks panel would have been in the system, right? When they searched, like, for keywords of this case, right?
Yeah.
He ran the talks panel on Darcy's blood that they had found on the scene and found out that the GHB in her system didn't metabolize in her body. The drug would only take effect if it had metabolized. He decided to actually clean up the movie and re-scan it because apparently Hodges didn't do good enough of a job. So he found a bank with a clock in the background, and the date in the clock was it was like those banks that used to have like this signals with the date and the time. But this one read January 6, 2001. It was 2 months after Darcy was supposedly dead. Jack is completely off the hook. Jack's completely off the hook because now they found out that not only Darcy is not dead, but she also faked her death and she got away with it.
Mm-hmm. Until now.
Until now, right? She's now using the alias Vivian Sinclair, and she is brought in for questioning. Robert's phone record shows that so-called Vivian called him 20 minutes before he was murdered. And the cell tower puts Darcy a block away from his apartment. And the .22 caliber handgun actually is that killed Robert is the gun that is found on her suitcase. She actually tells him that she killed Bob on self-defense. And she actually tells Sarah that with Robert's help, she faked her death 14 years ago. Sarah thinks that Jack blacked out from the drug use that night, which is true, which made Darcy put her plan into motion. She then drew her own blood because apparently she can do that. How do people know how to draw their blood, right?
And plus, she's a former user.
And it looked like she had been roofie, and she planted her blood on the trunk of her car to frame Jack. Like, why she did that, though? The phone record shows that Robert tried to reach out for Darcy 6 weeks prior because he realized that he pawned the film with her on it. And the film was bought by Jack. So now Darcy was worried because if he ever saw the film, there was a chance that he would see the date, maybe, and realize that she was alive. This is why Robert hired Emily and Gwen to get the film back. Darcy says that she faked her own death and she framed Jack because she wanted to start fresh. And she did that because she wanted to get away from her dad because her dad was actually assaulting her. And she says that I am not the same person anymore. Well, but you framed an innocent man and she kept it and you got away with it for 14 years. It means that actually you haven't changed at all. Sarah tells ZB that Walter Blaine, Darcy's father, hired a defense for his daughter. And she actually doesn't know if the claims that Darcy was sexually assaulted were actually true. But she needs help somehow. She is screwed over. And Ackley to Jack. We know what is that? That is Morgan's influence right there. Because we all know that Ackley was an absolutely... Yeah, he was an absolutely stupid before Morgan showed up. And Jack is like, no, it's okay. Thank you for Brent for, you know, giving me my life back. Sure, you have been judged by those CSIs for a murder you did not commit for 14 years. And now you're thanking them for giving you your life back. Okay. Well, so what do we think about this episode?
Nice flashback.
When I first watched this episode, I really loved seeing Catherine back. And was able to pinpoint where this episode happened. Like, they were able to solve the case for 14 years prior with technology that they had today. And there are some police, there are some cases that are still open because of technology that exists today that didn't exist back when they happened. You know, it can actually help them now. So, yeah, I absolutely love the ZB era. I absolutely love this era, except that one episode. But I absolutely love this ZB era. But yeah, I cannot wait to see season 3. So what episode are we covering next week?
4x4.
4x4. Wait, is that episode in which like they have like a lot of cases? Like Grissom's...
Yes, it's the one where Grissom has the one with the hammerhead.
Grissom has the one with the hammerhead. And Sarah and Greg are covering a case in which there's mold involved. And Nick is covering a case of this one kid that died. And Warwick and Catherine are working this other case of this woman that was found dead in an exhibition. Yeah, a lot is happening in 4x4. But we love you guys so much. Please stay safe. Drink some water. We love you. This is a safe place for you. See you next week. Bye.
Bye, all.